So thanks for introduction. First of all, I'd like to thank the organizers of this workshop for giving me an opportunity to talk my recent work. So following Professor Joris Murat, very nice talk on optical response in topological symmetries. I will talk about spintronics in topological symmetries. So this work was done in collaboration with my collaborators listed here. Like Aki Ozawa is coming here, Koji Kobayashi, and Stephen Kim are our main player in this today's topic. So the main purpose of spintronics is the electrical control of spin magnetization. So this is the typical device aimed to be realized called retroact memory. So in this device, the data are read in this part, and data are written in this part. So reading data, the giant magnet resistance effect is used, and the writing data, for example, spin transfer torque is used. The most challenging part in this device is the shifting of this domain structure using by current like this. So usually to shift this magnetic domain structure, certain large current is needed that causes the Joule heating. That is a big problem in the spintronics field. So topological materials are expected to be applied to spintronics device. With some advantages. One is the phenomena occur in topological materials are robust against perturbations such as impurity scattering. And second, they have a strong spin orbit coupling that makes possible to couple the magnetic and electric degrees of freedom. And the third one, these materials are usually insulating or symmetric, then the connectivity is kind of small. That is, we could expect that the less dissipation force. Okay, so this is the outline of my talk. We started with the introduction of the magnetic wire symmetries, focusing on this material. And in the second topic, we discussed about the magnet resistance effect. Finally, we talk about the domain wall motion in the magnetic wire symmetry. So as Professor Moore nicely introduced, Dirac symmetry or wire symmetry has a band touching point between the conduction and the valence band. And near the Dirac or wire points, the spectrum can be linear like this. Just similar to the neutrinos, these wire points can be characterized by this chirality of helicity like this. So there are two types of wire symmetries. One is the non-magnetic materials, such as tantalum arsenide, as in the previous talk. In this talk, we focus on the magnetic wire symmetries, which has the ferromagnetic order. So since this is has a ferromagnetic order, the anomalous hole effect occurs. So this is the anomalous hole connectivity in terms of the very curvature. In the case of the wire symmetry, these wire points have a monopole structure in the momentum space like this. And then the anomalous hole connectivity can be expressed in this simple form. So here, delta Kz is the distance between these two wire points. And simultaneously, the sigma xx vanishes because the density of states vanishes. So we could expect very large anomalous hole angle, that is the ratio of the anomalous hole connectivity and the long shear connectivity. That's the one of the important property of the magnetic wire symmetry. Another important property is that when the system is terminated like this, then it has the surface mode called Fermi arc state. So this shows that the electrons are going only in one direction. That is called by chiral surface state. Okay, so recently there are so many materials are studied as the candidate of a magnetic Weiss emitter. And you see that only one material, cobalt tin sulfur, has the very large Arnold's hole angle and the strength of Arnold's hole conductivity. So we focus on this material. So this is the first principle calculations done in this paper. You see that the linearized spectrum can be seen, and this. Blue and red indicates that the y points with minus and plus chirality. So this shows the portions of the y points in the momentum space. So the crystal structure is something like that. Cobalt has the Kagome lattice structure, and tin and sulfur have a triangular lattice structure. So the first step of our study is the construction of the effective tight binding model of this material. So this is the unit cell of this material. So because of the quartz has the Kagome lattice structure, we could expect that the crystal splitting is something like that, because the quartz has the, a rather closer interatomic distance comparing to other atoms. So in the atomic limit, they have electrons. Cobalt has 9 electrons, tin has 4 electrons, and so forth, 6. And in the crystal, all states below the Fermi levels are occupied, something like that. So we are interested in the some orbitals near the Fermi level, and forget about the other orbitals like that. So we focused on this one of the cobalt atom and one from the tin. So this is our simple Hamiltonian, which has the only cobalt atoms and tin atoms. So just assuming hopping parameters, nearest neighbor, second nearest neighbor, and other hopping parameters, and also assumed coupling as the so-called K-meta type. And then we computed the band structure like this. So this shows the position of wire points in the momentum space. We have 6 wire points in the momentum space, which is very similar to the first principle calculation. So this is the first principle calculation. This is our simple model calculation. So this is the anomalous hole connectivity as a function of the Fermi level, which is also similar to that in the first principle calculation. So this is the density state of our model. So in the case with the ferromagnetic states, there is a gap in the minority spin band, and there are wire points, which is very close to the Fermi energy. On the other hand, in the non-magnetic state, you see that the density of states at the Fermi level has the, a peak structure like this. So this peak structure is actually nice to have a ferromagnetic order, because the ferromagnetic ordering can be described by this Stoner criterion. D EF is the density of states at the Fermi level EF, and U is the on-site Coulombic repulsion. And when this product is larger than 1, this indicates that the ground state is the ferromagnet. So in our rough estimations using this density of states, this d density of states times u is just around 1. Meaning that the ground state is the ferromagnetic state. So if the Fermi level changes from here, then this shows that the density of states decreases. That means the, you know, this Zöllner criterion is not satisfied. So this is consistent with the experimental results. Experimentally, it is known that the only cobalt tin sulfur has a ferromagnetism. And when this, for example, tin is substituted by enzyme, then the ferromagnetic order disappears. So this can be understood with this density of states because the, you know, the peak structure is deviated by changing with the Fermi level or substituting some elements. Okay, so we believe that this very simple tight binding model describes the physics of magnetic wire semiconductor in a cobalt tin sulfur. So the next step is that, you know, using this simple model, we study the magnet resistance effect and also domain wall motion. So first we study the magnet resistance effect. So this is the, let's say, wire semiconductor in the conglomerate structure with the uniform magnetization, which may have a larger conductivity or conductance. And this has the domain structure and upper region, the magnetization points, plus direction, and minus direction in the lower region. So this shows that the different type of the domain structure. Left region has the magnetization pointing plus direction and minus direction in the right region. So using our simple model, we computed the conductance as a function of the disorder strength. And you see that the, you know, uniform case has the kind of largest conductance. And in these two cases, the conductance becomes smaller. So using this data, we computed the magnet resistance ratio, which is actually kind of big. So in the case of you know, current imprint situation, the magnet resistance effect becomes larger than the 200%, which is quite large compared to the conventional ferromagnetic metals. And also, in the case of current perpendicular geometry, the magnet resistance effect is still large, larger than the conventional case. So this can be understood in terms of Fermi arc states. So in the uniform states, we have you know, uniformly current flowing Fermi arc states like this. But in this case, you know, Fermi arc states in the top region and the bottom region have opposite direction. So if there are some scattering, then there are, you know, back scattering modes like this, and then the conductance becomes much bigger than this uniform state. The current perpendicular case can be also understood in terms of Fermi arc states. And in this case, there, you know, the Fermi arc states in the left and the right have opposite direction, and all this has also, this gives also the small conductance. So next, we consider the non-wire structure of Kagome wire semiconductor, and we study, you know, the conductance in the presence of several domain walls. So in this case, there is only one domain wall here, and the conductance is given by this value. It's increasing the number of domain walls, then the conductance decreases like this. So in the presence of a multi-domain structure, this indicates that the current flowing in this device is very small. So that is probably nice to think of restruct memory, because if the domain wall structure can be manipulated, then the small current generates the small you're hitting. So finally, we talk about the domain wall motion induced by the current. So what we consider here is something like this. So just applying electric current, domain wall moves from left to right, like this. So to study the magnetization dynamics, we base on the so-called Lifshitz-Gilbert equation. The first term in the right-hand side describes the precision motion around the effective magnetic field. The second term describes the damping. And the third term describes the interaction between these local spin magnetizations and the electron spin. So this interaction term is usually given in the case of the conventional metals, like this. The first term is called adiabatic term, which describes the exchange of angular momentum. And the second term comes from the spin orbit coupling. Only in the presence of the adiabatic term, there's a problem known to be intrinsic pinning. That means there's a threshold current below which the domain wall does move. In the presence of non-adiabatic term, domain wall moves, and this shows the velocity of the domain wall as a function of the applied current. So in the presence of only the adiabatic term, there's a threshold here, threshold current here, and below which the domain wall doesn't move, but with the non-adiabatic term, domain wall moves like that. So what we need here is the strong non-adiabatic term. But in the, usually in the conventional metals, this dimensional parameter beta is very small compared to the adiabatic term. So we need some materials with a very strong spin of the coupling. We expected that the worst meter. Okay, so first we consider a very simple model describing the worst meter with the isotropic spin of the coupling, like sigma dot p. So the first term describes the linear dispersion, and the second term describes the exchange coupling between the localized spin and electron spin. So, just writing a matrix form, you will see that this magnetization field looks very similar to the vector potential, but they have an opposite sign between these two wire currents. So then this is called axial vector potential. So now our axial vector potential is now depends on the position in the vicinity of the domain wall. That means we have magnetic field analog of this axial vector potential like this. So in this axial magnetic field, we have a kind of a Hall effect in a real conventional Hall effect, current flows perpendicular to the electric field and magnetic field. But in this case, we have the actual magnetic field. Then the total current is canceled. But we have so-called the actual current, which is the difference between the current of plus polarity and minus polarity. And using this model, you will see that this axial current is proportional to the spin density sigma. So what I mean is that in the presence of electric field and the axial magnetic field, we have the axial current or the the spin density like this. So this induced spin density kicks the local magnetization that is the source of the spin transfer torque in the magnetic wire symmetry. You can derive the explicit form of the, for example, the actual Hall current with the, using the Hall connectivity, and then we can compute the spin density like this. So just by substituting this analytical result in the random ratio to give back the equation, we obtain the new term of the spin transfer torque in the magnetic velocimeter, which is written like this. And you will see that this term has a form of non-adiabatic spin transfer torque. So this is the numerical simulation of domain wall motion in the presence of the electric field using this random Wiechert Gilbert equation. You see that the domain wall motion moves from left to right like this. So this result is given with the very simple velocimeter model. And, what happens in the case of the Kagome-Lattice velocimeter? So using our simple model, we study the spin transfer torque in this material. So this is our system, which has the, you know, magnetization pointing magnetic direction in the left region and the press direction in the right region. This has the domain structure in the middle. So this is the spin density in the presence of applied electric field computed with the linear response theory. And this means that the torque term is actually the non-adiabatic spin transfer torque. So just using some typical value of the exchange direction and the external electric field and the domain wall, this then it computed the velocity of the domain wall, which is given by like this, and comparing with the nanowires of Pomeroy, this domain wall velocity is one order of magnitude larger than that in the Pomeroy. Okay, so this domain wall motion can be understood intuitively in, when we consider the charge density. So we found that the, you know, in the vicinity of the domain wall, there is the accumulated charge density like this. So then when the electric field is applied, then the motion of the domain wall is described by this simple, you know, equation of motion, like this, actions, and domain walls move like this. So this, you know, important thing is that this accumulated charge density is hardly screened in the case of the velocimeter. So finally, we showed that the charge density and the domain wall computed taking into account of the screening effect. So this data is the charge density in the velocimeter region. That means the same level is close to the wire points. So we don't see, you know, any differences between the screened you know, charge density and the non-screened charge density. But the, when the Fermi level is away from the wire points, then you will see strong screening. This dotted line is the charge density in the absence of screening, and this orange line indicates that we screen. Okay, so in summary, we have studied the spintronics functionalities of magnetic velocimeters. We have first introduced the effective two-orbital model to describe the physics of the magnetic velocimeter in a cobalt thin sulfur. And then using the model, we studied the large magnetic resistance effect, and also the spin torque will be small current. Okay, thanks for attention.
Okay, thanks for a stimulating talk. We have time for questions.
Thank you very much for your talk. It's very interesting. Perhaps I missed it, but did you say that in your orbital model, mm-hmm. is cobalt and sulfide the only one of its family that is ferromagnetic?
Is that the conclusion? You mean experimentally or theoretically?
Theoretically.
So okay, theoretically, there are so many, you know, proposals of magnetic resonators. First one was proposed by, you know, Leon, and also, you know, like iridium, pyrochlore. There are so many.
No, but I'm sorry. So in that family, so for example, cobalt and selenite, yeah. would you expect that to still be ferromagnetic?
Yes.
I have a question to the first part of your talk. Mm-hmm. Could you explain, maybe again qualitatively, where does the magnetoresistance come from in the vial semimetals?
Yeah.
Are you thinking of ballistic transport of those vial arcs, Fermi surface
yes.
arcs, or where does the extra contribution come from when you apply field?
You mean extra contribution?
Okay, we'll forget about extra. So
okay.
Mm.
Okay, let's see. Yeah, a simple way to understand it is, you know, using the Fermi arc splits.
So here I'm confused about the geometry. Which way are you cutting the samples? Are these Fermi arcs? In which plane do they live?
So in this case, this side has the Fermi arc states with electrons moving in.
Okay, so let's say KZ direction is this way, and that's where your two vial points are.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Vial points are pointing plus Z and minus Z direction.
Okay. Now, when you compute the actual resistance, magnetic resistance, there will be contribution presumably from the bulk, and there will be contribution from the surface.
Bulk contribution, because this model. It's not perfect vial symmetry, meaning that there is a small frame pocket in the bulk.
Right. But so when you find magnetic resistance of the order of 200%, where is that effect coming from?
I think the frame pockets contribute to the.
So you're saying it's mainly Fermi surface contribution, or it's mainly surface Fermi arcs contribution?
Yeah, both contribution is important, I think.
All right, well, I have many questions. Somebody else? No, that's probably just me putting that. All right, I have many questions myself. So, just a little bit about the material. So mm-hmm. you mentioned this 0.3 Bohr magneton magnetization. Is that mm-hmm. measured?
Yes.
That's
measured experimentally and also computed. Yeah. Fast transfer.
And is it known how much of that is spin and how much is orbital?
Yeah. If I remember correctly, you know, the first principle calculation without spin orbit coupling, the magnetization is just 0.333. Something like that, but with spin orbit coupling, the magnetization is like 0.3.
Okay. So not much. A lot of your discussion is about domain walls, so mm-hmm. I guess anisotropy is very important. What type of anisotropy is there in this material, and where does it come from?
Good point. Yeah, in our model, the anisotropy of the spin orbit coupling comes from the, you know, carbon-related structure. We assume that the spin orbit coupling is like a chemical type.
Mm-hmm.
So next nearest hopping depends on, you know, spin. So then there's no hopping between the layer in the form. So that's the source of the anisotropy.
Okay, I guess I'm referring to magnetic anisotropy, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There can be I guess what you describe will lead to some, if you want, electronically mediated mm-hmm. anisotropy. due to the...
Yes.
You know, for something like cobalt, generally there's also atomic anisotropy.
Yeah, that's true.
Which I would expect is not a small factor. Experimentally, what's known? I mean, is it Ising-like?
Experimentally, it's known to be Ising-like.
And you know something about like what the width of the domain walls are?
Width of domain wall. I don't know. My colleague is working on it, and I think it's all of 100 nanometer.
I can keep asking questions forever, more or less. Somebody should interrupt if they have their own, but maybe one more, before, since we still have a little more time before the break. Is about the very end. You stated that the domain walls have charge. And I was again a little bit confused how that's possible in a metal. So I guess you're relying on the on the low carrier density.
Yeah.
So, what's a Thomas Fermi screening length?
It's
still quite small.
In the case of
narrower or wider than the domain wall.
In the case of metals, it is very short, like order a few nanometers.
But, indeed.
In a wire semiter, the density of states is very small.
Yeah, but the carrier density in this compound, I guess it must not be that small. What's the resistivity? Do you know what like the typical resistivity value is?
Typical resistivity? I don't remember. Sorry. Yeah. But I think the carrier density in the cobalt zinc sulfur is at least one order of magnitude smaller than that in a meter.
Yeah, but that's probably not enough. I mean, if your
domain
wall is 100 nanometers wide, that means your screening length is probably shorter than the domain wall width.
Yeah, we need to check carefully.
Difficult to imagine. Okay, I'm sorry, I shouldn't monopolize this. Let's thank the speaker again. So now we have a coffee break. We come back at 10:40.